Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, the bloody Syrian civil war didn't necessarily start that way. There were a group of activists who opted not to throw rocks, or worse, at the Syrian state troops, but to hand them roses and bottles of water. Their leader was a man named Ghiath Mattar. Sam Cady is the director of a documentary about him called Little Gandhi. And Sam joins us now on News Talk. Good afternoon, Sam.
Good afternoon, Sean. Thanks for having me.
What part of Syria did Ghiath live in, and what motivated him to take part in the protests?
Ghiath Mattar, he lived in Daraya, which is a suburb of Damascus, a small area that's very near the heart of Damascus. And actually, you know, it's oppression, the lack of freedom of speech, and so many other factors that country, Syria, lived under for 40 years that encouraged him to start his, non-violence work and peaceful activism.
And within the protest movement in general, was everybody on board, at least initially, with taking a non-violent approach, or was he something of an outlier?
Well, early on in the revolution, back in 2011, around like March of 2011, it was peaceful. People want a reform. Even early on, the people of Syria did not want to tumble the Syrian regime. They just want some changes, and they want the distribution of wealth to be fair, and other things that they demanded. But when things escalated, people thought, they need to continue regardless, but they didn't really know how. And Ghiath Mattar was one of the prominent activists who said, well, as he was inspired by Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King, which is amazing, to find people in the suburb of Damascus that they're aware of Mahatma Gandhi, but Martin Luther King, and studied the history. And he rallied thousands of people to march peacefully, just facing gunfire and violence with white roses and bottles of water. And it was very inspiring and made him so iconic. And that movement stayed very peaceful for the first 10 months, in the revolution, during the revolution.
But obviously the regime thought, even though it was nonviolent, that it was a threat.
They thought actually it's more dangerous than being peaceful is more dangerous to them than being armed. Being armed, there is an easy solution for it, which is to crush everybody who holds arms. But being peaceful, you're making a lot of noise, and the people around the world will sympathize with you and will stand by you and will hear your voice more. When armed conflicts take place and people start using violence, it gets a little confusing. And the government in general has the upper hand because they control the media. They can lobby, they can around the world to say, well, these are terrorists, we're fighting, we're in trouble, and we have to defend ourselves and our rules and regulations. But when it's peaceful, it becomes very confusing and very hard to defend and find the reason to stop it.
So perhaps part of the motivation for arresting Ghiath was to try and prompt a violent response to it.
Absolutely, 100%. Actually, they went after every peace activist in Syria, especially the prominent, of them. And to a certain point, they were all gone. I mean, these are the leaders, and these are the leaders of the movement that the Syrians will, rallied behind. And when they lost all of them, they, in a way or another, they felt they got stuck in a corner, that they have to defend themselves, and they justified turning this into more an armed movement rather than a peaceful movement.
And I think his body was returned 4 days after he was arrested, and clearly he had been tortured. And I suppose that was to send that message too.
Absolutely. And it's very, very unfortunate. And honestly, that was the most difficult part in the film to make and to talk about, because we had footage of his body. Basically, you know, he was trapped by the Syrian regime. He was on the run when he knew they're coming after him, even though he was so peaceful. But he was, you know, contributing and arranging, protests. He was trapped by the Syrian regime, and he was captured and unfortunately tortured to death at age of 25. And his body was returned to his mom to teach not just her, but everybody else, especially in that neighborhood and the Syrians in general, that you should not dare to do something like that. And it just breaks your heart to see a young, charismatic man like Yat Matar and even his friends who lost their lives to go through this. And while, you know, the world is just watching.
How did you go about making this documentary, given that I assume getting into Syria was tricky, or getting in at all?
Yes, it was very tricky operation because I wanted to shoot the film in Daraya, where Ghiath Matar was born and raised, and his network at that time was still there when we thought about making the film. But Daraya at that time was a besieged area, and it was a war zone area where actually the regime, the Syrian force and regime, they could not get in, and the people actually could not get out. And the population of this area went down from 300,000 people to only like 6,000 people. Mm. And this is where we wanted to shoot the majority of the film. So what we did, actually, we connected over the internet with some of the activists that they were still there at that time. And we were lucky to find somebody who got a reasonable camera. So what we did, we actually trained this activist over Skype on how to shoot a film and how to, you know, light a set and how to, you know, just the technicality of it. And that took, you know, a few weeks. And we did this when we were, me and my crew, in Istanbul. At that time, we already started shooting the film, interviewing some of the activists who fled Syria. And we used to connect over the internet, and he was brilliant. He got it. And we used to send him, you know, samples of what we shot, and we did this training. But then the decision that I made, that like I wanted to direct this myself, but over Skype, and it was a very interesting process, something never done, never thought of doing something like this. So basically, they had their laptops. We were lucky for them to have some laptops, and we were connecting over Skypes. And my crew, basically Istanbul, our hotel in Istanbul, became more like our studio, our control room. And we were watching everything, and I was giving direction. I was calling the shot and calling the cut and interviewing all these activists. And this is how we went at it. And you know, this is before COVID, so we kind of like found a way.
Yeah.
Even though at a distance. And now people talking about right now about how can we shoot a film and how we can do something. And me and, you know, my team, and it's like, gosh, you know, it looks like we've just seen this just a few years ago when we tried to shoot remotely a film, a complete film. But the main challenge, honestly, was not just the shoot, but how to smuggle the footage. Something we never thought about, because I thought they could upload the footage, over the internet, because they connected with us over the internet. But we found out that it might take 3 years for them to upload the footage because the internet is so slow. So they ended up actually smuggling the footage for us on small thumb drives, you know, in a underground tunnels until they got it to the capital.
My
and
word.
Then they smuggled these thumb drives to Lebanon. And then I thought Lebanon is still not very safe for this footage, so we put them on a hard drive and we got it to Turkey. And from Turkey, we were able to, you know, get that footage, or most of it, I would say maybe 70% of what we shot there.
What a journey. That film is called Little Gandhi. The director is Sam Cady. Thanks a million, Sam, for talking to us.
Moncrief on News Talk.